This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon. This is Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in for Tony Perkins on this Friday afternoon. I'm glad to be here. I hope you are, too. We have a bunch of topics to talk about today. We have four separate topics, which is a little bit unusual. So let me run through them for you. First up is Congressman Jim Banks of Indiana with his take on President Trump's meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. He'll also chime in on North Korea and the status of Obamacare and really whatever else he wants to talk about, because he's going to give us the update on Washington and what's going on there. Oregon is on its way to making its abortion laws even more liberal, if you can believe that. And taxpayers, as usual, will be expected to pay to kill the unborn. David Collada of Oregon Right to Life will be here to update us on what's going on out there. And in the you can't make this stuff up category, the Boston Public Library hosted a drag queen story time for children last week, presented by a group called the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Rick Henshaw of the Catholic League will join us to talk about that. And then our final segment at about 40 after the hour is we're going to be talking with Bishop E.W. Jackson and get his take on Mark Zuckerberg's claim that his social media giant Facebook can replace the church. And if we have any time left, we'll take your calls. It's always great to talk with our listeners. So the first topic that we're going to be talking about today is, of course, this big summit that's been going on that President Trump has been involved in. And, you know, from everything I've heard, he's done a fantastic job. He's, out there on the world stage. There's some who said he shouldn't go to the G20 summit because the G20 summit, for goodness sake, he has an opportunity to build, to establish, continue, enhance relationships with leaders of 20 nations, 19 other nations. So, at least other folks that I've heard from think that it's a great idea. And, of course, the much anticipated and awaited meeting with President Vladimir Putin of Russia, which has already taken place, is something that everybody was all excited about leading up to that. With all of the news about potential Russian interference in the elections and that sort of thing. So we're waiting to get the congressman on the line here. So we'll talk about a couple of other stories until we hear that he's up and running here with us. Okay, well, he is on the line. So Congressman Jim Banks, who represents the 3rd District of Indiana and serves on the Armed Services Committee, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to have you with us today.
Thank you very much. Let me first apologize. I was supposed to be with you last week. My flight was diverted. I was in the air and unfortunately missed our time together. So it's great to be with you again this week to make up for it.
I think you had a pretty good excuse. Those Sky phones don't really sound that good anyway, do they?
Well, I'll tell you, as a member of Congress and new to my job, I spend a lot more time in airports and just have the worst luck flying back and forth from Washington, D.C. to Indiana. But that's the way it goes. It's been great to have the week off. We've been back in our districts this week, which has been a healthy opportunity for me to visit with my constituents and to get out of the bubble of Washington, D.C. for a few days, which I always enjoy more than the time I spend in the swamp of Washington, D.C., but yeah. it's been interesting nonetheless. As you mentioned a moment ago, with the president traveling abroad, there's still much to talk about this week.
Well, I've got a half a minute audio clip of President Trump, and this is from a couple of days ago, and I'd like us to listen to that first, and then we'll kind of jump into the conversation, Congressman. So, Jonathan, if you could rule that, please.
We are confronted by another oppressive ideology, one that seeks to export terrorism and extremism all around the globe, to strip them of their territory and their funding and their networks and any form of ideological support that they may have. And we will prevail. We cannot accept those who reject our values and who use hatred to justify violence against the innocent.
Well, Congressman, first of all, give us your impressions of what you've seen thus far on this trip that the president's been on.
Well, first and foremost, I give the president a high mark. This is a president who hasn't been afraid to project America's strength, who doesn't shy away from American exceptionalism when he travels abroad. Don't forget that this new president and the president who precedes him refused in many ways to project that strength abroad. This president is a refreshing change from the previous president. So far, everything that I've seen and read from the president's trip has made me very proud of President Trump and what he is saying, what he's projecting to our allies around the globe. This has been a healthy week for the president.
I don't know if you had an opportunity to listen to the speech last night. Did you hear the speech that so many are talking about?
Yes, absolutely. The president's speech in Poland was a great example of that strength and projecting America's strength that I was just talking about a moment ago. What we want to hear from the president, not just reassuring our allies, but also putting our enemies, our foes on notice as well, that America is watching. We need the cooperation of countries like China and Russia, who aren't aligned with America's interests every day. We need their support in projecting our strength toward those who seek to do harm to America or our allies. And I'm proud of the president and what he's projecting. His trip this week has been a very good trip for the president, but also for the mission of eradicating violence and terrorism around the globe.
Well, I have several different questions that I'd like to ask you, but I want to give you a chance, since you weren't able to join us last week, to give us an update on whatever you'd like to update us on that's going on in D.C., whether it's health care or tax cuts or anything else that's going on, including, if you will, tell us your thoughts about the investigation that with Robert Mueller and the crew that he's putting together.
Well, there's so much to talk about. I remain optimistic that we are on the right track in so many areas to move our country forward and to fulfill this conservative agenda that Republicans were elected in last year's election to fulfill, from repealing Obamacare and replacing Obamacare, which those efforts are ongoing and continuing to, from that to continuing to support the right to life. Let me mention on that note that both the efforts out of the House and the Senate to repeal Obamacare include efforts to defund public funding of Planned Parenthood, which are a substantial effort that I'm very proud to support as a new member of Congress. Those efforts are ongoing. They have a ways to go, but I'm optimistic that when we get back to Washington next week, the Senate will pass their version to repeal Obamacare in the next week or two, and that we will have something to pass on to the president's desk for his signature before the August recess. Last week, before we left town, as a member of the Armed Services Committee, we passed the FY 2018 National Defense Authorization Act, which is a big step forward as well in our national security interests in rebuilding the military, getting our military back on its feet after watching it decimated so badly under the 8 years of the Obama administration. That gives me great hope as we talk about the national security issues and some of the big issues around the globe that should concern every American. Those issues, as well as moving forward in our efforts toward tax reform and a significant tax cuts, which I believe will do more to build the economy and grow economic growth in a way that we haven't seen since the Reagan years. Each of those issues are what Republicans ran on in the election last year, and I'm optimistic that we're on the right track to fulfill that agenda, which makes me very proud to be a part of this Republican Congress.
You know, it seems that a lot of, you know, one of the things that people vote when they vote for somebody, they hope that the things that politician says they will do will actually get done. And at least in my view, and I want to ask if you agree with this, you know, President Trump came in with, you know, in the campaign, he said, here are the things that I want to accomplish. It seems to me that a lot of those things, and not, you know, the big nuts have not been done yet, the health care reform. But we, as you said, you're working on that. Tax cuts, these are complicated things that take some time to get done. And if our legislative process is working right, then there will be back and forth and, you know, argument, discussion, debate, and that sort of thing. That's completely normal. And people aren't used to what should be normal. But in your view, do you agree that President Trump has gotten a lot of things done that he said he was going to do, which is kind of amazing?
He hasn't shied away from any of the big issues, the big topics that he talked about during the election cycle. And that should make us proud, those of us who did vote for him, even some of us with reservations along the way, that this is a president who is keeping his promise on so many levels. Of course, maybe the most important note of all of his appointment to the Supreme Court and Justice Gorsuch, who is pro-life, who will continue to defend our religious liberty and our religious freedoms on the court, on the Supreme Court. And we can only hope that there will be more opportunities for President Trump to appoint like-minded justices to the Supreme Court as well. This is why I remain optimistic. Each of these issues are complicated. They're tough issues that we're wrestling with as a country. But this is a president who hasn't shied away from any of them, even those issues that are controversial, fulfilling the promises that he made during the election cycle.
Well, in my view, too, the last president, and, you know, we're not here to bash the last president. That's been done enough, and he's gone, and thank goodness. But he left a big mess in his wake, whether it was foreign policy or domestic policy or environmental policy. And so there's an awful lot of stuff that has to be fixed that was broken, and it was all based on an ideology that I think was unhealthy for this country. Tell me what you think, and let's talk about another topic here, and that's North Korea. You know, you hear all of these things in the news, and the North Korean news sort of blends in with everything else that's been, you know, pumped at us like a water out of a fire hose. But North Korea is a pretty dangerous situation, is it not? And what, in your view, what are the kinds of things that you're hearing with in terms of the kinds of ways that we can respond to what that crazy dictator is doing in North Korea?
This is scary indeed, as we now understand and recognize that on the 4th of July, this missile test by North Korea shows that they have capabilities that we didn't know that they had before. Of course, it being no coincidence that this missile was launched on our Independence Day, on a day of celebration in America. Keep in mind that Kim Jong-un has launched more missiles in 6 years than his father and grandfather launched over all of their years combined. We're dealing with a dangerous and erratic, irrational leader in North Korea that we have to address. All the while, all of the sanctions, all of our efforts to date have made no difference in deterring North Korea. So that means that our president and his administration, they have a lot of work to do to calculate a strategy moving forward. That's why the president's discussions with both China and Russia, who continue to do business with the Kim regime and with North Korea, need to be put on alert that we won't tolerate that we could impose sanctions against China and Chinese businesses who continue to do business with the Kim regime.
Well, we're running out of time here, Congressman. Appreciate it. We certainly have, I think, a much better chance now than we did the last 8 years. Congressman Jim Banks, representing the 3rd District of Indiana, so glad to have you on the broadcast. We appreciate it.
Great to be with you. Have a great evening.
Coming up next, a new unprecedented bill in Oregon requiring insurers to provide free abortions. We'll be back to talk about that next.
Is there a cost to free speech? For nearly 40 years, Washington and much of the American public have held up disclosure and campaign finance laws as ideals and the path to cleaner and freer elections. In her book, The Intimidation Game, Kimberly Strassel provides firsthand accounts concerning how both have been hijacked by the left as weapons against free speech and free association, becoming the most powerful tools of those intent on silencing their political opposition. The book provides a chilling expose of political scare tactics and overreach, such as how Citizens United set off a wave of liberal harassment against conservative politicians and the targeting of Tea Party groups by the IRS. Listen to Ms. Strassel as she discusses about her national bestseller, The Intimidation Game, how the left is silencing free speech, which chronicles recent attacks on conservative nonprofits, businesses, and donors at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
So what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms in association with American Family Studios introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
You're listening to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in today as guest host for my friend Tony Perkins. Well, a sweeping new bill passed by Oregon lawmakers will force taxpayers to assume some of the costs of abortions, even though many oppose the procedure. With us now is David Collada, political director of Oregon Right to Life. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Evan. Thanks for having me on.
Well, glad to have you here. Tell us what's going on. Just give us an overview of what in the world is going on. And this is something the Democrat governor signed, right?
My understanding is she's about to sign it shortly, or within the next few days, maybe. So I don't think she's signed it quite yet, but anytime now.
So what's it all about?
Yeah. So just to give you some background, Oregon has no restrictions on abortion whatsoever. So we're the only state like that. Abortion's legal through all 9 months of pregnancy. It can be performed by people without medical licensing. It can be performed at clinics that are not—they're self-regulated. They're not under the Oregon Medical Board, so there already are no restrictions on abortion. So this bill, House Bill 3391, which passed out of the legislature Wednesday, expands on that further. It'll lead to more abortions, including late-term, including sex-selective abortions, because again, there's no restriction on that. The bill fundamentally. What it does is it requires insurance companies to cover abortions at no cost. So right now, I believe there's one insurance company that provides plans without covering abortions. That's Providence. This bill requires all companies to cover it, except it does carve out an exception specifically for Providence because they came out in opposition to the bill earlier on. So the bill excludes Providence, but the bill also creates a new program that will fund abortions paid for by taxpayers for people on Providence plan. So it actually does the same thing, just in a backdoor sort of way. So it's a really horrendous bill. We believe it'll lead to a lot more abortions.
You know, it sounds like somebody in Oregon thinks that abortion is so important that they're going to let people who are not licensed to do it, that they're not going to require inspections of abortion clinics. What is wrong in that state?
Well, unfortunately, the people running our state in terms of politics, I mean, the majority of the House and the Senate are run by Democrats who are all pro-abortion. Governor Kate Brown is pro-abortion. She used to lobby for a pro-abortion group way back when. And they are supported by Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood stands to benefit the most from this bill because they're Oregon's largest abortion provider. And there's, unfortunately, a very strong relationship between the politicians in charge and the abortion providers in the state. And we're working hard to change that, but that's the reality we're faced with right now. And I hope that, you know, this kind of bill will serve to draw more attention to the fact that the people in charge are rather extreme. I mean, most Oregonians, I think, do not agree with late-term abortion, but the people in charge of the state believe that, you know, abortion is okay to be legal up through all 9 months of pregnancy, and that's unthinkable to us.
Well, if most Oregonians don't believe that late-term abortions are right, you know, I mean, this is maybe a silly question, but why is it that they keep putting those radical pro-abortion legislators back into office?
Well, I think there are a lot of ways to answer that question, but I think the word needs to get out more. And I think the good news about this kind of bill, I mean, it's hard to say there's good news, but is that it does draw attention to the fact that there are people in the legislature, in the governor's office right now, that support late-term abortion. And so we're thankful for you having this show, for example, and other news media out there about this. It's drawing attention to the fact that there are people that actually do support this kind of thing. And, you know, we try to get the word out to voters every election cycle. And Keith Brown is up for re-election next year. And we'll do everything we can to get a pro-life governor in there. But the good news also is that we've had some success. Last year, Dennis Richardson became our Secretary of State, the first pro-life person to win statewide office in quite a long time, and he's unabashedly conservative and pro-life, and he won office. And so that was a good first step, and we hope to build on that more next year.
Well, yeah, it sounds like a long way to go, but you know, good work on the advances you have made. And in the last couple of minutes, tell me what efforts is your organization involved with and others in the state of Oregon to push this thing back? Are you expecting some lawsuits or some stays or injunctions to try to prevent this from actually going into effect?
Yeah, we're working on looking into that right now. I don't have an answer for you yet as far as what we can do or what we'll be able to do. That's something that we're still figuring out. We just got through the process of trying to fight in the legislature and unfortunately lost that, you know, but we're figuring out the next steps. The bill does have an emergency clause on it, which means that it can't be referred by the voters. So normally voters have, I believe, 90 days after a bill is passed by the legislature or after the legislature adjourns to get enough signatures to cause a referendum on the bill. And it's easier to do that than to do just a normal initiative to change the law. But unfortunately, the emergency clause prevents us from doing that. So another way that the bill is really bad. So we're working on a response, but I just want to draw, if I may, attention to one more thing with the bill that I haven't mentioned yet. Is that right?
Yeah.
Not only does it require all insurance plans that already cover abortions to do it for free, and not only does it cover abortions for Providence plan members, as I mentioned, it also establishes about $500,000 to fund abortions for undocumented immigrants as well. So these are people who are not eligible for health insurance through the state because of their immigration status. So we're creating another fund to pay for abortions, including late-term abortions, for another group of people. And the Democrats in charge of the legislature were talking all session about how there wasn't enough money to do this or that, transportation, education, the different important issues, and then they turn around and start spending more money on abortion. So it really shows what they really care about fundamentally, and that is killing unborn humans.
Yeah, it's kind of the sacrament. And, you know, that's counterintuitive, too, when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be a little sarcastic here, but typically, the if you really peel back the layers, the reason Democrats want undocumented folks in this country is so that they can they're undocumented voters to get more votes, even though if you're not a citizen, you're not supposed to be able to vote. But somehow folks have figured out how to circumvent that. But and then they wanted to provide $500,000 for those same people to abort their children.
You know,
it just doesn't make any sense. Well, we're
it's
out of time.
Not caring for them at all.
Yeah, David, we're out of time here. But David Kalata, political director of Oregon Right to Life, keep up the good fight. And thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much, Evan. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Coming up next, folks, and this is not fake news, the Boston Public Library is hosting a drag queen story time for children called the Boston Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. It's the group of drag queens dressed as Catholic nuns. This is our crazy section coming up here, but we'll have Rick Henshaw, Director of Communications of the Catholic League, up next to tell us what's going on.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, a lot of good news. Jobs numbers came out. They were expecting about 158,000 jobs. Some were expecting as high as 170,000 jobs. I was expecting in the high 190s. We got 222 new private sector, non-farm payroll jobs, and that is a hiring surge, another one that caught everybody by surprise. Markets went up on the news. The real good news that nobody is talking about, well, there's two things. One is the unemployment rate went up. Well, how's that good news? Listen, if the unemployment rate goes up, how many times have you heard me say that we can't have a growing economy now in this environment without unemployment going up? Because unemployment going up means there are people coming out of the labor participation or those that are not participating in labor, those that have disappeared from the workforce are coming back in. And that's why the unemployment rate goes up. And it needs to go up for things to be really healthy. So it only went up to 4.4%, but nonetheless, that's good news. Now, some would argue, and I guess I'd be in there, that the best news of all is the U6 number. The U6 is the underemployed. And just about a year ago, it was at 9.5%. It's at 8.6%. That, by the way, is an 8-year low. That means people are being employed in the work in which they are trained and equipped for. And that is the best number of all. Good news in the economy.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon, and here's our unusual segment for the week. The Boston Public Library proudly announced on its Facebook page June 29th that it was closing out hashtag Pride Month with a drag queen story time at the Children's Library featuring the Boston Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Now, just to give you a little bit of background here, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, believe it or not, is a tax-exempt group of homosexuals who dress up as nuns. They've been mocking Catholic beliefs, teachings, and practices since they started in San Francisco on Easter Sunday, 1979. And now, the publicly funded Library of the City of Boston found it appropriate to celebrate that group's anti-Catholic bigotry and then welcome them to parade it before little children. Rick Henshaw is the Director of Communications for the Catholic League, and he's here to tell us about it. Rick, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Well, what do you think about all this?
Well, you know, it's an outrage when you think about it, but as Bill Donahue said in our press release, what perhaps is most distressing is how unsurprising it is. Here is a group, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, who since they founded themselves in 1979, have engaged in every kind of anti-Catholic bigotry. They've mocked our beliefs, our teachings, and our sacraments, and they began and continue to mock the Catholic nuns. You know, even the name, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, is a mockery of the chastity of Catholic nuns. Yet here, the Boston Public Library, publicly funded, invites them in at the end of their Pride Month to parade this bigotry before little children at the Children's Library. And they're dressed, some of them clearly in, you know, the veils of Catholic nuns. And this kind of hatred, you know, one cannot imagine if the shoe were on the other foot, if it was an anti-gay group that used its name and its attire and its antics to mock gays. They'd never be welcome there. But Catholics and Christians are always fair game. And here this public institution brings them in, as I said, to parade their hatred before little children.
Well, you know, and I think that's the most distressing part of this. You know, you're going to have groups that mock all different kinds of other groups, and that's certainly one thing. And, you know, we've mm-hmm. got thick skin. We can handle that. But, you know, I think it's completely, terribly, horribly irresponsible for whoever leads the public library there in Boston to think that this is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's precisely, as you say, you know, groups are going to organize, they're going to do whatever they want. We have freedom of speech in this country, but that doesn't mean that they should get the blessing of a public institution, especially a library, which, you know, ought to be concerned about education and promoting knowledge and promoting respect for others, and to do this under the guise, obviously, of Pride Month, under the guise of promoting respect for gay and transgender people, to promote hatred toward particular groups of people because of their religious beliefs, is just, it's such a sham. And certainly we would hope that the taxpayers of Boston would certainly speak out about this and make it clear that their hard-earned tax dollars have better uses that they can go for than to be spent, again, teaching anti-Catholic, anti-Christian hatred to little children.
Well, have you all had any conversation with any of the people responsible for putting this together, and what kind of communication have you had, if any?
Yeah, no, we have not. We sent them a copy of our news release the other day, and we have not had any response from them. And we asked all our members to contact David Leonard, the president of the Boston Public Library, and we gave his email address, but we have not at this point heard back whether there's been any response to anybody. We certainly have not received any.
Did you have any sense of how many children were actually in attendance? Because if there was even one, I think one should question the judgment of the parents who brought them, assuming that they were aware. Were they? Was this advertised? Did people know this was going to happen?
It's not clear. They put out a Facebook thing promoting it, kind of bragging about it, but it was on the day that this took place, June 29th. And that's the first that we heard about it. We're not aware that there was any pre-advertising. But again, this was a month-long Pride Month, and perhaps they did hand out information about what was going to take place every day. But yeah, that's what you wonder about. We don't know how many children, but they put out a couple of pictures, again, very proudly on Facebook, that showed at least a group of children sitting there, and then some of these cross-dressing men in their nuns' outfits posing with a few of the children. So there was at least a group of children, and to be honest, you can't be sure, but they looked like preschoolers or kindergartners, very young children. And you do wonder, were the parents informed about this? And if they were, you know, whatever their feelings about cross-dressing men interacting with the little children, certainly one would hope that they would have looked at the bigotry being promoted here and would have decided that their children should not be subjected to that.
Rick Henshaw is the Director of Communications of the Catholic League. Rick, thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. Good to be with you.
Well, you know, you would think that there's all this gender confusion business. This certainly doesn't help, does it? Well, coming up next, Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg says, forget church. Let his social media network be your community. We're going to be talking with Bishop E.W. Jackson about that topic, and we'll also take your calls right here on Washington Watch.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we visit on one of the days on our tour of Israel is the Shepherd's Fields. Now, this is a place in Bethlehem. You can look out on any given day and see shepherds with their sheep as if it were 2,000 years ago during the birth of Christ. So that's a very special place that we visit. Yeah, the terrain would be the same. You can just picture yourself being there the night the angels saying about the glory of the coming of the Lord. That's just one of the places we visit on one of the days. So if you would like to join us on our March 8th through the 16th tour of Israel, we'd love to have you. Just go to the website, twholyland.com, for more information. twholyland.com. Or for a free brochure sent to you in the mail, call us at 800-FAMILIES. That's 1-800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5.
God is calling people today to ceaselessly defend the gospel. Ceaselessly defend it, in season, out of season. And you and I are given the opportunity of doing that, and I hope that this weekend will encourage you to do it more courageously.
Join Norman Geisler and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics, October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Early bird pricing ends August 1st. Visit ses.edu for details.
God has uniquely gifted you for His purposes. You are wired for good works. Volunteering with Operation Christmas Child directly connects you with God's global purposes. By serving year-round, you further the proclamation of the gospel in more than 150 countries through a simple gift-filled shoebox. To learn more about local, year-round opportunities to make disciples, or to apply, visit SamaritansPurse.org/volunteer with OCC.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there's probably never been a more important time in our economy to be thinking about a charitable gift annuity. I hope you'll do that just to shore up, to firm up some more income, permanent income, income that you can count on for the rest of your life while you're doing the Lord's work. A charitable gift annuity has been something I've been talking about for 25 years. Finally, we're seeing even mainstream start to get on board with the merits of charitable gift annuities. I hope you'll consider it. You can call the AFA Foundation. Someone there will help you work through the details and find out whether you qualify for a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Well, howdy and good Friday afternoon. Evan Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch this afternoon. A couple of sort of social media things here. At T. Perkins is Tony's Twitter handle. Mine is at Evan Fowler. And if you like this broadcast and you say you missed part of it and you want to go back and hear it again or play it for your family and friends, go to frc.org/radio. That's frc.org/radio. I'm also going to give out our phone number here. We hope to be able to have a few minutes to get some of you great listeners on board here. It's 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Our next segment's we're going to be talking about Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg. He recently stated his desire to have his social media platform act as a community for its users, replacing churches and community support groups. And let me just read a little bit of an article about that. He discussed a number of topics in this particular address, including Facebook's new mission statement, which was changed from connecting the world to a new goal to, quote, give people the power to build community and bring the world closer together. Bishop E.W. Jackson is president of STAND, that's Staying True to America's National Destiny, and we're so pleased to have him on as a guest this afternoon to talk about this. Welcome, Bishop Jackson.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, what's your take on this thing? Mark Zuckerberg wants Facebook to replace churches and community support groups.
Well, it ought to be a signal to the church how desperately we need to remind people that there is no substitute for God and there is no substitute for church. That it should not surprise us that somebody like a Mark Zuckerberg and others, because there is a spiritual vacuum in their heart, they're going to try to fill it with some counterfeit. I mean, this is what happens. We are made for God. We need Him. We need relationship with Him and with others who know and love Him as part of our spiritual sustenance. In fact, I think our psychological and mental well-being And so this is a counterfeit, and it ought to just be a spur to the church. Let's get out there and remind people. In fact, as I may quote the president, we want God.
That's good. Well, let me ask you, if you could contrast the difference between a relationship, and I put my fingers up in the air and make quotes, a quote-unquote relationship on a social media platform like Facebook, our so-called friends, versus the community that you find in a Bible-teaching, healthy church?
Well, of course, there's no comparison whatsoever. In fact, my wife, who has been somewhat slow to come to social media, used to say to me all the time, when I would say, well, you know, these are your Facebook friends, she would say, these people are not your friends. it was a little bit funny. I would chuckle at it because she's absolutely right. I mean, this is sort of a superficial way of relating to people when what God intended for us was to have love for one another that is deep and passionate and committed. So much so that Jesus said, greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for one's friend. So we're talking about a covenant commitment through the gospel of Jesus Christ that is far deeper than any social media platform can ever provide.
Let me ask you a little bit of a tough question here. Do you think the church has in some way failed in providing that authentic community for people to connect? And perhaps that's why people are moving to Facebook and things like that as a counterfeit or a substitute?
Sure, I think partly because we're human beings still, and we're still flawed and imperfect, and our relationships get hurt and damaged and fractured. But also partly, I think, because church leadership has not really focused on the importance of love as a sign of our authenticity as disciples of Jesus Christ. I mean, Jesus said, not by the miracles you perform and not by the size of the churches you grow, he said, but by this shall all men know that you are my disciples, by your love for one another. And I think one of the most common complaints about church is that people don't feel loved, that they don't feel cared for. And so, yeah, I think it's partly because we're human beings and we just fall short of that, but partly because we're not giving it the emphasis it deserves.
Bishop, I want to put a question out to those who are listening right now, a question, and ask some of our listeners to call in. And here's the question. Let's make this positive. What are the great things that your church is doing to have a good, strong community? What are the things that you are involved in your church? What are the things that your church does that reach out to the community and that would blow away anything that Facebook could ever offer? And I'm going to put that question out. The number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. I'd like to hear from some of you. Just tell us some of the great things that your church is involved in and perhaps how your church community has blessed you or your family in some way. So, Bishop, while we're waiting for folks to call, give us some examples of some of the things that you have seen in the church community you're involved in that would fall under that description.
Well, look, it's interesting that you would ask. Of course, I'm a pastor. In fact, I literally just left our youth center. We have a youth center that's open all day, every day in the summer. It's open more limited hours during the school year, open all day, every day in the summer. I just left youth and staff there. In fact, I met one parent there who was just thanking me for offering their child, that's not a member of our church either, for offering their child a place of safety and security and fun and that's clean and holy and decent and is going to instill the right values in them. So that's just one of the things that we, and I know many other churches do, to support the community. We didn't open the youth center primarily for our church members. We opened it primarily for the youth in the community. And that's just one thing that you can do to sort of interact with the community, one of the things that we're doing. And, of course, I've preached at many churches, and many churches are doing many wonderful things.
Absolutely. The number is 866-372-7234, and we've got several calls that are rolling in here. Just got to give our call screeners a couple of minutes to get those screened and ready to go, and then we're going to try to get some of you on the line here. Again, the question is, what is your church doing? What are the great things that your church is doing for the community to reach out? Because, you know, we're talking about this this Facebook thing where Mark Zuckerberg says he thinks that Facebook can replace the church and other types of community organizations. And, you know, Facebook's not all bad. It does have, it has its purposes. It's a good way for some people to stay connected. Although, you know, sometimes, you know, my kids or some of our friends, they'll call me and they'll say, well, did you hear about such and such that we're doing? Did you see it on Facebook? And I say, no, because I don't visit the Facebook page all that often. But for a lot of people, it's a good way to stay connected. So what's your thought about that, Bishop?
Yeah, look, I think that God gave us intelligence and creativity for the purpose of serving one another, serving Him. And so to that extent, Facebook can always be used to serve and to glorify God. But when it becomes a substitute for authentic relationships and a substitute for relationship with God, then it's being used in a way that God can never be pleased with. But I will say this. I mean, look, our church advertises on Facebook. We reach out through Facebook. And to the extent that Facebook becomes a gateway into the lives of others so that you can have real relationships, it can serve a very healthy purpose.
Absolutely. Well, Melanie is on the line from Indiana. Melanie, you're calling in to tell us something I think that your church is involved in your community. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. I love your program. And yes, we a few years ago, we started serving a community dinner every Tuesday evening. It's open to anyone and everyone that wants to come. We're now serving over 150 people. It's a little town. It's a poor town, and it's a drug-ridden town. And so we just invite the people in to come and eat and feed them and love on them. And it's just been a great ministry to reach out outside the walls of the church.
And what kind of response have you gotten back from that, from the people in the community? How are they reacting?
Oh, people love it. They now come like 45 minutes ahead of time just to visit with people, to visit with one another and stuff. So it's just really become a community bonding thing. It's just great.
And that's a little different than Facebook, isn't it? I mean, you can't hug people on Facebook, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. People need to see Jesus with skin on.
You know, I was just thinking that a moment ago. That's exactly right. And Facebook and Twitter can't do that. Again, they have their purposes, but they certainly can't. Bishop, your thoughts about what Melanie's talking about here.
Well, you know, we've been hearing a lot of news lately about the epidemic of opioid addictions. And when she mentioned that, I thought to myself, one of the reasons that people turn to drugs is that they don't find satisfaction in other ways. And one of the important means of satisfaction is relationship. Facebook can't do that. You know, it can certainly occupy your time, but it can't give you the sense of satisfaction of knowing that you're loved and that you love others and that people are there for you who care about you and want the very best for your life. And that's what that church is doing. They're trying to invite people into a sense of community where they get that kind of satisfaction. Because if we don't offer it, believe me, the world certainly will, Satan certainly will, but God has better things for people, and relationship is critical to it.
Absolutely. The number is 866-372-7234. Dana is on from Missouri. Dana, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. I listen as often as I can. I love you guys. I appreciate everything you do for us and our country.
Well, thank you.
We do, our church, I go to Faith Christian Family Church in Warrenton, Missouri, and we are have a servant's heart team at our church, and just we do a serve day in the summertime where everybody volunteers and we go into the community and we do serve at the schools. We do yard work in the old folks' communities. We go into nursing homes or old folks' retirement communities and give away gift bags and flowers and goodies, and we pick up trash by the streets. Just a huge event. And then we do, right now they're doing
back to school bash where they do eyeglass clinics and backpacks for kids and all kinds of things like that. We do a ladies' tea at Christmas time and invite people in, and each lady hosts a table. We feed them a snack and a dessert. We have entertainment, and this all Easter. We do a huge outreach at Easter. We have our small groups, and we have summer fun groups where we just have fun with people. We do all kinds of things. We just try to love on people.
And do you have time for church?
Well, we do. We actually have three services. We have weekends on Wednesday. We have an early morning and a later morning service, two campuses, and we just love on people.
Wow, that's so great. Well, Dan, go ahead.
Fitting in weddings and funerals sometimes is kind of tight, but we do it. We just love on people.
Oh, that's fantastic. Dana, thanks for listening, and thanks for your call as well. Well, the number is 866-372-7234, and we've gotten lots of calls in here. Bishop, do you want to jump in and make another comment before we take another call?
Well, yeah. Look, what did Jesus say? If I'm hungry, did you feed me? If I'm thirsty, did you give me anything to drink? If I'm in prison, did you come to visit me? And, you know, you could say if I'm homeless, did you try to provide something for me to give me shelter over my head? And as much as you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me. And this is authentic church. And while we're accused of being intolerant because we seek to adhere to the Word of God and the Bible, we, frankly, are the most tolerant people in the world because we are commanded to love people, whether they agree with us or not, whether they live the way we think they ought to live or not, we're supposed to love them.
Absolutely. That's great. R.D. is on the line from Oklahoma. R.D., thanks for joining us on Washington Watch today. Tell us what your church is up to.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. So our church, a few years ago, we had some young single adults that wanted to reach out to our community. So they started up a trailer park ministry that was within a mile or two of our church, and kind of started out small, and now we've started a van ministry going out there picking these mostly middle school and high school children. Some parents are starting to come now, but we've seen huge growth in our church. Not that that's a big deal, but a lot of these people are coming to Christ. And the other thing we do is our pastor and a few of our ministers will go out to our local prison here in town and minister and preach to them on I think it's Tuesday nights each week. So really seeing a lot of God's really moving here in Oklahoma through those ministries.
Wow, RD, thanks so much. I tell you what, Bishop Jackson, I think if we were going to score church versus Facebook, Facebook has just been blown away, don't you think? Man.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was thinking, I hadn't even thought about this until this interview. Our church, and we're not a mega church by any stretch of the imagination, but we've got a vibrant congregation. We're in the prison. We're in the nursing homes. We're in the public schools. We're in the community. We've got a youth center. The church is supposed to be directed outward, not focused inward. And the call that you're getting, I mean, that to me, that's the model. These are the models of what church ought to be.
Yeah, I'm going to take one more quick call from Lane in Texas. Lane, I just wanted to get you in here before the end of the program. You've got about 30 seconds.
Thank you. I'll make it really quick. We run horseback riding programs out of our cowboy church, and it's the exact opposite of the digital world. And what we do is our kids and our people connect with the horse, and horses don't allow shallow relationships. And
that's
so
right.
It's an exact opposite of what you get on Facebook, and the whole world needs to get back to the touching creation, having real relationships, and guide that back into a real relationship with God. Don't even get me started on Mark Zuckerberg. And thank
there we
you guys
go.
For all that you do. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Lane, and thanks for making it tight there. E.W. Jackson, thanks for joining us. We got to get out of here. This is Evan Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch. Thanks for listening.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.